The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and Isabel Hardman. Afghanistan is now effectively controlled by the Taliban. Kabul has been taken and there is chaos at the airport as both diplomats and Afghans try to flee. Fraser, can you just keep us up to date on the developments over the weekend?
It's funny how much has happened over the 2 days of the weekend. I mean, even yesterday, Sunday morning, started with the Americans saying to the Taliban, look, can you guys wait 2 weeks until we get an interim government sorted out so we can then basically hand over power to you? But no, the Taliban didn't want to wait. By Sunday afternoon, there were reports that they had entered the city of Kabul. And by Sunday evening, there were pictures of Taliban officials sitting in the offices of the Afghan president, who, like pretty much every other major diplomat, has now fled Kabul. So you've ended up with the extraordinary sight of this Afghan army of 300,000 people, 30,000 special forces, trained by Americans, NATO allies over 20 years, not even being a presence in the streets when the Taliban came to seize Kabul, which was the last part of their Afghan jigsaw. They now pretty much run the whole country. So we have then seen a really rather stunning change in political position. We've spent most of the last 20 years being told that the Taliban were pretty much on a par with the Islamic State, that the Brits and the Americans who gave their life fighting in Helmand, they were fighting the Taliban with the objective of the Taliban not getting back in power. Now we're being told by Joe Biden, effectively, but it doesn't really matter if the Taliban are in power as long as Al-Qaeda has been routed, but they're now redefining the mission in Afghanistan to be one of getting rid of terrorists, saying that mission effectively was accomplished when bin Laden was discovered in Pakistan, by the way, not Afghanistan, and that it doesn't really matter if the Taliban take over Afghanistan. Boris Johnson himself is using similar language, but it's pretty difficult to gloss over the last 20 years of British history and to gloss over the fact that so many British soldiers fought and were killed by the Taliban. Some of these soldiers, like Johnny Mercer and Tom Tugendhat, are now in the House of Commons and they can be expected to put their point of view across on Wednesday. So this is a defeat of epic proportions. It's a defeat, in this case, of America, because the Americans were the last ones there. We pulled out a decade ago. I feel a bit uncomfortable with Britain waving its finger at America and saying you should have stayed when we decided to bolt a long time ago. I don't think we're in a very strong position here to criticise Joe Biden, but I think the whole world is absolutely stunned at how quickly the end came and how wrong American intelligence was when they predicted it would be 9 to 12 months before Kabul came under any serious threat.
And Isabel, Fraser mentioned it there in terms of the UK response, which is to have a debate on Wednesday.
Yes, so MPs will be coming back for a special sitting of the House of Commons, which will start at 9:30 on Wednesday and carry on until 2:30 in the afternoon. So it's not a full day's debate. There's plenty of opportunities for MPs to entirely squander this recall. And on the basis of various foreign policy debates I've covered over the past decade in Parliament, I'd probably put my money on them doing exactly that rather than extracting important information from ministers. The problem with a lot of foreign policy debates in Parliament, particularly ones when Parliament has been recalled and when MPs feel that the eyes of the country and the world are on them, is that they tend to give speeches about the general principle of intervention and more often than not end up just talking about Iraq rather than anything to do with the country that's actually the topic of conversation. Obviously, the intervention in Syria back in 2013 was the worst example of this, but there are lots of important questions that do make this recall worthwhile if it is used correctly. So, for instance, a lot of the discussion over the past 24 hours is, what is Britain going to do to fulfil its obligations to the people in Afghanistan who have helped Britain in one way or another, whether it's interpreters who have been finding it extremely difficult to get out of the country in which they are now incredibly unsafe because they will be seen by the Taliban as collaborators with a force that the Taliban have been at war with for several decades now. Another is journalists and other people who've been working alongside the military and the Afghan government who need our protection but who aren't currently receiving it for various reasons. There's a lot of loopholes even in the interpreters programme where if you were dismissed as an interpreter, you don't seem to be eligible for that support. So those are some detailed questions that MPs really need to be asking rather than making sort of general noises about protecting people. There was a really important point that was made by Sir Mark Sebwell this morning, which is that Afghans shouldn't be left with a choice between life under the Taliban and life in a refugee camp. Well, what does that look like in terms of Britain's involvement? And indeed, what is Britain going to do to support those who do end up in refugee camps as a result of the Taliban's return and those countries that end up supporting those refugee camps? And then we come on to the question of military action. That was something that Ben Wallace was talking about this morning. He did say that he thought it was too late for Afghanistan in terms of stopping the country from descending back into being an exporter of terror. He's been very blunt in recent weeks about his fears about Al-Qaeda returning. Now, that's not a view that's shared by everyone. A lot of people, including James and General Sir Richard Barons, who we interviewed on the Saturday podcast, were saying that the Taliban are going to want to stay away from welcoming back terror groups because that's exactly the point at which NATO would start having drone strikes on those terrorists and start getting interested again in Afghanistan. But there needs to be a debate from MPs about what Britain would do and what the red lines would be in terms of terror groups returning. And then there will be a debate about what's going to happen to the women of Afghanistan as well. And Joe Biden has said that he wouldn't want to send his own children to Afghanistan to fight for women's rights. And there are obviously a lot of regimes around the world where women are treated exceptionally badly in the same way as the Taliban looks as though it will start returning to treating women in Afghanistan. But I think there's a lot of understandable guilt here that having given Afghan women a glimpse of what a free life could be, of what an educated life could be, of what a professional life could be, is there anything that can be done to give them hope that this isn't the end of it in terms of their free lives?
And Fraser, Isabel mentioned Ben Wallace there. He gave a media round this morning in which he appeared to be on the verge of tears at one point, talking about the situation. So what do you think the mood is like within the government in terms of how the UK has handled this? Because as you say, there's a lot of a quickness to blame America here. But do you think there is a frustration on the UK side in terms of how Boris Johnson and perhaps Dominic Raab have so far handled it?
I think the mood is one of dismay and despair that the Anglo-American project should have ended in such a calamitous way in Kabul. But I think we should bear in mind a couple of things. One is that Britain is no longer a country with a military big enough to be able to make a difference on the other side of the world. That's a decision taken indirectly by every single prime minister who has kept the size of the military down to the NATO bare minimum. The recent review by Boris Johnson was a little bit better, but not much. We have got a peacekeeping military, not a war-fighting military. But still, I think we've got this muscle memory from the days where Britain did have a bigger military. So you do get politicians rushing to the House of Commons to declare what a tragedy and what a problem this is and something must be done. Well, Britain left Afghanistan 10 years ago. David Cameron did exactly what Joe Biden is doing, thinking, right, I'm a newly elected leader. I don't want this on my record. It's time to take this on the chin, pull the troops out and move on. The other thing that Joe Biden has been criticised for doing, which is, you know, handing power to the bad guys, leaving the people of Kabul to their mercies, this is exactly what Britain did in Basra. Now, there, We were given control of one of Iraq's biggest cities, but we failed to keep the peace there. We underestimated the nature of the threat, and we allowed the Mahdi army and other Shiite death squads to wander around, imposing a reign of terror on the people of Basra, who were nominally under British protection. When I was out there in the Basra airport base, where the troops were outside the city, the soldiers were just dismayed that they were being kept inside while they knew all this was going on in the city. But we ended up doing exactly what Biden is doing, negotiating with the bad guys, negotiating with the death squads to allow for the British evacuation of Basra Air Base. We said we were handing it back over to Iraqis, mission accomplished, and the situation was so bad that Basra had to be re-invaded by the Iraqi government. Now, I think we should bear that in mind when we're criticising America, because Britain has been here before. We have repeated these mistakes. And I think the danger comes when politicians lose track of the fact that we simply do not have the power to do these things anymore. It might have been a great and noble idea to reshape Afghanistan, to reshape Basra, to reshape Iraq. As Tony Blair put it, the kaleidoscope is shaken, let us reorder the world around us as the pieces fall. We never had the military that was able to do that. And I think that should be the lesson that we learn. I think there's a grave danger if politicians don't realise that we no longer have got the ability to put things right in Kabul, if we ever did have that ability. When politicians do have ambitions that are out of sync with the military capacity, you end up with a disaster like we saw in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think that is the kind of disaster which we should try not to repeat again.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, Isabel.